This podcast is presented by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Enjoy the presentation.
Welcome to A Conversation with History. I'm Harry Kreisler of the Institute of International Studies. Our guest today is Shikashi Toyoshima, who is a distinguished biophysicist and professor at the Institute of Molecular and Cellular Biosciences at the University of Tokyo in Japan. He is the 2008 Hitchcock Lecturer on the Berkeley campus. Dr. Toyoshima, welcome to Berkeley.
Thank you.
Where were you born and raised?
I was born in a small city in Akita. It's a northern part of Akita, and it's a rather rural part. And so if you ask some Japanese, where is Akita located? Some of them perhaps may not be able to answer.
And was this a rural area?
Yeah, rural area.
Rural area. And looking back, how do you think your parents shaped your thinking about the world?
Speaking about the world.
Yeah. Well, the world of science, the world of the world.
That's a difficult thing.
Yeah,
particularly if you live in a small town and so little chance to expose to outside world. But my kindergarten was administered by a German priest, uh-huh. Catholic priest. So in a way, I sort of exposed to outside world. But little chances. Sure, if you grow up in a small town in the rural area in Japan.
Your mother was a school teacher.
Yeah, right.
And what did she teach?
Well, what do you say? Housekeeping?
Economics.
Home managing.
Yeah.
It's maybe just quite specific to Japanese teaching school.
But, well, we actually had a major like that. It's escaping now what it was called. But yeah, I know what you mean, actually. And so, and how many siblings did you have?
How many?
Brothers and sisters?
Oh, yeah. I have one elder brother.
Okay. Yeah. And your mother, I gather, worked with you and exposing you and your brother to science?
Oh, in a way, because sort of home managing thing is a mixture of many kinds, not really science, but in your everyday life you need to know many things, and some requires technology and some require sciences. So if you want to make your home life more efficient or well ordered, perhaps you should know about sciences and technologies. So in a way, she sort of introduced me to science and technologies. Yes.
So, but this is interesting because you're suggesting that what she was teaching involved kind of understanding of different processes, which sort of come together in the home
management. Right.
And you and your brother made a lot of models and worked with toys to develop new kinds of toys and so on.
Oh yeah, that's kind of my hobby. Uh-huh. Yeah. So in my days, it is quite fashionable to make plastic models. It consists of parts, plastic parts. It's so if you glue and make, say, plane or ships and those things. But then just gluing things is becomes not so interesting. Mm-hmm. So I sort of switched to cut the wood myself polishing the surfaces and painting, and that kind of thing I did myself. And it was very nice.
your youth made you comfortable with being in the workshop, so to speak,
with
tools.
Right.
And did you do your own designs also, or were you following plans that were available?
Well, sometimes you have to make your design because the parts or the tools you have is very much limited. So of course you have to do your design. And that's incorporated some electronical things. Its painting is quite interesting, and yeah, the cutting things you need your hands.
Yeah. Right. So hands on.
Right.
In addition to using the mind, and what as a young person, what subjects excited you in school? Was it always science and math from day one?
No. Well, so elementary school children, just going outside to do sports.
Do sports? Oh, okay. So that's interesting.
Maybe baseball or something like that.
So you're suggesting that a scientist has to be well-rounded, actually, in their preparation.
Yeah, right, definitely. Yeah. And he or she has to be exposed to many things. So that really helps.
And although this was a small town, you say that you had a very good education as a young person before you went to college.
Yeah, yes. I don't really know why I could get such a good education, but the elementary school system was unusual at that time in Japan, and so. In the Japanese system, one teacher sort of takes care of everything. But in that elementary school, specialized teachers are available, and they teach sciences, mathematics. And so they are very sort of interested in bring up students to a good level and to make them interested in they teach. Yeah.
And so where did you do your undergraduate work?
Undergraduate work, it's in the University of Tokyo. And then I went to graduate school, University of Tokyo.
And as an undergraduate, you had many choices before you. I think I read somewhere that you even considered going into literature.
Oh, that's before going to a university.
I see. Yeah. So you were interested in literature before you went to college.
Right.
And why did you finally decide to go the route of science and not go the route of being a doctor? A doctor, medical doctor.
Medical doctor. Yeah. My brother went to medical school already, and I thought it's not necessary to be a medical doctor. You don't need two medical doctors in the family. Yeah. Also, so I thought that, being a novelist or a philosopher, you need special ability. But doing science is, well, you may be able to do it, just with sort of normal abilities.
But literature was a possibility. I mean, right. you were attracted to that as a young person. So was it that once you were an undergraduate, you know, science was just fascinating?
Oh yeah, certainly. But So I think I was quite good at literature and physics in high school, and I was not so good at mathematics. Mm-hmm. And so the good thing about I sort of liked literature. That makes me to write quite good. sort of writing style, mm-hmm. for example, and also give you that you have to think quite logically, mm-hmm. not just the feeling. So yeah, I like the kind of philosophy things, and that really requires you to think logically, mm-hmm. and that helps your thinking also in scientifically. Of course, you use some language. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, to think about. So that makes you quite logical, I would say.
You're suggesting that your education really prepared you in different fields that all contributed to the field you finally
Definitely.
Went into.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah. It's about help.
And did as an undergraduate, you majored in physics, but as I understand it, you were very eclectic. You didn't want to stay just in one subject and, for example, be a physics student.
Yeah. Certainly, I was very much interested in biology things. And also, my sort of elder brother wanted to be a medical doctor, so he brought biology information to sort of my interest.
I see.
Yeah. And the reason I sort of I chose the physics department is you have to learn physics first. Mm-hmm. Then if you study biology, perhaps you will have a better sort of understanding of the biological things. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, from the start point, I thought I would like to do finally to biology field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your work has combined the two. Now, at the university and then in graduate school, did you have mentors in the sciences who essentially helped you move along in a particular direction once you knew that you were interested in both biology and physics?
Oh, yeah. So you have a chance to do summertime experiments in the undergraduate school. And so I don't remember why I thought of that project, but it's a hardware simulation of nerve excitation. It's using so-called tunnel diode. And so I went to one laboratory, and they because new scientist just came back from England, and so he sort of showed me how to do the experiments. And at that in laboratory, I sort of exposed to a structural study, mm-hmm. and so I sort of fascinated about it because the protein has a certain structures, mm-hmm. and you have to know how it looks like at least, and mm-hmm. how it changes the structures, and you can see it.
Yeah.
So that sort of introduction to a structural biology, really.
So and it was Professor Wakabayashi who exposed you to sort of thinking about the images so that you could see the structure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so this was a real apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, it is.
And I gather he had studied in Cambridge, so
right.
so you were moving beyond the provincial village, and really sort of being exposed to the newest technologies that were coming from all over the world in a way that using what was available. Let's talk a little about being a scientist and mm-hmm. what are the skills involved. You talked a little about how your background prepared you, but what is involved in doing the kind of work you do in a skill basis, in addition to knowing the biology and knowing the physics, mm-hmm. Work style and so on?
Work style. Yeah.
Do you have to? You must have to focus. To stay with a problem and have patience. What else?
What else? To do a good science, I think you need to have some skills other people don't have, right? Mm-hmm. And in my case, I think it was very helpful to have sort of hobby electronics. mm-hmm. as a...
I'm sorry, hobby?
Hobby, electronic things.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So having worked with these electronic models that from an early age.
So, yeah. So in doing a good experiment, the subtle sort of small tools is very important, actually. Mm-hmm. So by being able to make such a tools much sort of simplify and accelerate your study sometimes. And also that allows you to think a kind of new method or if you need it. And so So that sort of expand your thinking.
Because at one level you're working on a theoretical level. Mm-hmm. You've learned the literature, you know the physics, you know the problems, you've studied under people who are looking at interesting problems mm-hmm. that interest you. But you're saying an important dimension is being able to manipulate the technology or take it to a new level. Mm-hmm. And all of this has to come together.
Yeah. So you can find a new technology, then, yeah, maybe you have a whole new field.
Right? Yeah. So the word multitasking seems like it applies, that you're able to see many roads that you might go down simultaneously, in a way.
Yeah, sometimes you have to do, right? You are sort of forced to do so. In my case, the first crystals I got of calcium ATPs that I really working on for 20 years or more nearly, that the crystal is very thin. And so too thin. And nobody sort of has the technology to get the structure information from it. So there were different approaches, mm-hmm. of course. So three sort of methods I could think of at that time, because that's a very thin three-dimensional crystals, mm-hmm. if you make it thinner, then and just one layer or two layers, maybe you can get the structure information by electron microscopy, right? And if you can make it big enough for X-ray, then you can do a standard X-ray crystallography. But maybe possible to develop a new technology to analyze those thin stacks of 3D crystals. And so I tried three of them. That's quite fitted to me mm-hmm. because I sort of like developing technology that helps to solve the final goal. All the things sort of give you help to converge, and so I could not really make thin enough, but I could extract information from electron microscopy and also make it a bit thicker and just enough for X-ray crystallography. And so all those things converge and got me solution of the structure.
So let's help our audience understand it. So what you're saying is you come along, you're interested in protein and the importance of calcium. We'll talk about that in a minute. But on the technical side, what was already there were three ways of trying to see what is going on in the cellular process. So the first question that comes to mind is why is it important to see? In other words, because seeing the picture will give you clues about the process. Is that it?
Right. Of course, the protein changes its structure to achieve its functions. So structure is really the basis of understanding things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's very important. So seeing will show you the structure. If you can find a way to see beyond the human eye or the technologies that are just there, then you will be able to watch structure over time. And by seeing the change in the structure, you can understand the process.
Yeah, that's a basic idea. But that was really a dream.
Yeah.
So the big thing, big advancement was made when I sort of could see different structures in reaction cycles.
But it's interesting. You had to be comfortable.
Yeah.
As a technician,
right.
Yourself, in the sense that you had to know what each could do, what the electronic microscope could do, what crystallography could do, I don't recall what the third element in this was, but you had to know what they could do, but not be trapped by the limits of what they could do, right? Because if you just
know the limit, of course.
Yeah, yeah. You had to know the limits.
Yeah.
It was by being comfortable with the technology, seeing the limits, but knowing that you wanted to go beyond the limits.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's right. And to me, it's sort of a ability to get good experiments. It's to think of alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many ways to approach the goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if your knowledge of the technology is wide enough, or you can sort of find a new way to reach the goal, that's even better, perhaps. And that could make open you a whole new field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
the problem set here. Let's talk a little about what was the substantive thing that you wanted to look at. So you want to look at, as I understand it, and I'm not a scientist. You wanted to look at how the muscle takes the signal from the brain mm-hmm. to take an action, and how the signals are translated into a process so the muscle does what the brain wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a wide scope, yes.
Yes, okay.
But I'm sort of, the fact I'm working on is really a tiny bit of that process. That transmission of information from brain to ideal muscle requires movement ions, in my case. So, and how those ions are actually controlled is my interest right now.
Right, and this is happening where, on the surface of the muscle or in the cells of the muscle? I excuse my layman lack of knowledge, but I want to explicate this because it's very fascinating.
Well, the calcium is everywhere,
mm-hmm.
right? Perhaps if you hear the calcium, perhaps you immediately think of your bones and teeth. But there are a small amount of calcium used for regulations of many processes.
And you said yesterday that I think 1,400 grams of calcium in the body, and then how much are used for the processes that you were interested in?
10%.
No,
10 grams.
10 grams. Okay.
Or less. Very small.
And the function here is what? In other words, what is the function that calcium is undertaking in the problems that you are interested in?
Mm-hmm. Well, the direct sort of relationship is the calcium has to bind to a so-called muscle thin filament to muscle to contract, right? Then, of course, the muscle has to be relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And then this calcium have to go back to or pumped back to the original positions, original sort of. It's actually a vesicular system. So I pump back into the vesicles. And I'm really interested in how this pumping process is going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of realized by one protein called calcium pump.
I see. Now, in your lecture yesterday, you described how when this task is undertaken, which is very important for the muscle. You know, many were called, but only one was chosen, calcium, basically. Talk a little about that, because calcium ions have unique qualities that make them the one who can do this best.
Yeah. Yeah, I made a list of four properties that makes calcium ions ideal to such regulation processes. It's not so easy to find those things in the textbook. It's a good scientist should consider why calcium. Mm-hmm. But in the textbook, not so easily you can find such descriptions.
Mm-hmm. Right. But one of the characteristics that you talked about yesterday was that on there's a lot of calcium on the surface,
right.
And then when the calcium goes inside, there's a big multiplier effect.
Right.
So it's very efficient.
Yeah, it's very efficient.
Yeah.
The calcium has the size of the ion and the size and the discharge of the ion is actually quite important, and that sort of determines many other properties. But the basic is the size and charges and the availability, of course. Mm-hmm. If that particular ion is very small in nature, then you cannot really use it for sort of daily processes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now moving in this direction, so we've now moved to another area beyond the technical, mm-hmm. but it's really one's ability through physics and biology to move forward in understanding the process that's really critical for this activity that makes life what it is. So in a way, you really have to bring your knowledge of physics and biology to bear. So it's a good thing your brother was a doctor and got you interested.
But I was sort of surprised after sort of solving the first structure. I have to learn so much because mm-hmm. I was sort of trained as a physicist, but I really needed to know about how the ions are sort of controlled. So I needed inorganic chemistry, mm-hmm. and the reaction is, of course, a chemical reaction. I didn't know how it really done. Mm-hmm. So the knowledge of organic chemistry and other things. Well, so you have to, of course, you have to know how to solve the structure and the sort of the computer things and biological, and you have to sort of know how it really works in terms of the chemistry. So chemistry, including inorganic chemistry, organic chemistry, and physiology, and so many things. Well, that's a real protein like that, so you need to know a lot.
How does this come about in your lab? In other words, it sounds like that in addition to all that you know, there's just a lot of collaboration and new information coming out, you know, in all of those fields. So in a way, you have to be a filter. As you're moving forward mm-hmm. with adapting the technology and understanding the problem you want to focus with, all of these sciences are really changing in knowledge that's coming from elsewhere. So collaboration must be really important.
Yeah, of course. And particularly important thing for me was to sort of I was a professor. Mm-hmm. And I have a sort of chance to hire associate professor or assistant professors.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trained as an electron microscopist, so I'm not the expert on X-ray crystallography, for example. So the mm-hmm. first thing I did was to hire a very good young scientist as a young X-ray crystallographer as an assistant professor.
Mm-hmm.
Then I learned from him, and I could do myself. And the next thing, so he moved to other university. So I hired the other person and who is a specialist of computer simulations. So I learned from him how to do it and how I should think. So that's quite important. Mm-hmm. And because I wanted to acquire those skills to myself. So everyday collaboration or everyday interaction is very important. Mm-hmm. So my laboratory is, in a way, it's unique because sort of I try to hire people with different disciplines. Mm-hmm. It's another unusual sort of level.
It's intellectually challenging, and what makes this fascinating is as you're going forward and grappling with these problems, you are essentially creating a new field, I guess.
Yeah, hope so. Yeah, it turned out to be so, and you have to know the sort of limitation and how what really does. For example, computer simulation can do actually limited things, and it's still a very incomplete stage. But people don't tell you because they try to sort of appear you. But they didn't tell you bad things about the current technology, so you have to know yourself.
So this goes back to what you said. In other words, that there are real limits to what you can do with one piece. Basically, there are limits to the electron microscope for what you want to do. So I guess this suggests to me that you have to be courageous in a way, in addition to having the capacity to comprehend all these fields. And actually, you have to be courageous enough to say, I don't know enough, that I've got to learn from this person who's my junior associate.
Right. You should.
Yeah.
That's a best way to learn.
Yeah. But is it a question? Is courage involved here? I mean, is it that you're off working on this and nobody really knows what you're doing? But because you're not really, are you challenging people or are you just moving everybody forward? So do you have to be courageous is the question.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so the problem I sort of attacking is nobody has done it, right?
Yeah.
So you have to sort of hire young, ambitious scientists. Mm-hmm. If they know too much about the sort of limitation and the technology, then they may not sort of interested in, right? So it's quite good to important to hire young ones and to collaborate with them and absorb the knowledge from them.
Now, what does this tell us about how we should be thinking about training scientists? Mm-hmm. In other words, how do there's a contradiction here. One is you have to know one field very well. Mm-hmm. You have to have all the information about the electron microscope. But on the other hand, you're suggesting you have to break out of that. So can everybody follow your example, or is this where science is going to have to go?
Well, sort of my sort of experience is that chances for doing good science comes if you work hard.
Mm-hmm.
But you may not be able to accept that chance, or you may not be able to find this is a real chance and you should go this way. That to make a correct decision, I think you need at least technologically very much about the technologies.
You have to,
right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't do right decision, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. You can't make the right decision about where to go next.
So, of course, a good one is always challenging, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to decide, this one I should take or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so And you should know, or you should be able to think of how I can approach this problem. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know anything about the technology, then you can't really make a decision, right? Or find the right way to approach the problem.
Right. So, this is actually important because it comes up again and again in your work that you're, on the one hand, you're comfortable with the technology and you can see where the technology might go by combining several technologies to enable you to see. Yeah. But on the other hand, you have to be on top of this problem of muscles and the calcium pump. That is, you know where you want to take that technology, which you have developed and advanced, and apply it to an important problem in the mm-hmm. field.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, of course, you always look for good or important problem. Mm-hmm. You may become interested in. But there are many, mm-hmm. and once you get some technology, you can find an interesting one always, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And if you find an interesting one, it takes time mm-hmm. to pursue and explore the real problems. Mm-hmm. For me, I started to work on this protein in 1990, I think, so nearly 20 years now, mm-hmm. right? But still, I'm working on only one particular protein. Mm-hmm. So, the sciences has advanced so much, I think, and by combining many technologies. And to be able to combine things, I think it was very fortunate for me to be trained as a physicist. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, obviously, if you were just a technologist who worked with the electron microscope, you could have gone nowhere. In your lecture, you showed the photograph and images that you ultimately took through these processes. What is the importance of that photograph? I mean, you're suddenly seeing the structure.
Right.
No man or woman has done that before.
Right.
You have an images which you can take over time and almost create. You showed a little movie created. So where does that take science with regard to this particular problem? I mean, what is important about seeing the structure and the way it changes?
That's a difficult question to answer because it's really my life here as mm-hmm. a scientist. what I can tell is that just seeing the structure is not good enough. Mm-hmm. Right, so I saw the first sort of structure in year 2000, and in the end of the same year, I had another structure, but the second one is sort of the opposite end of a reaction cycle. Mm-hmm. So I could not understand why that the structure should be right, mm-hmm. and. But since then, I succeeded to get actually five other structures mm-hmm. in the reaction.
Within the cycle.
Within the cycle, right. So finally, so I understood why that the second one should look like that.
I see.
Right? Uh-huh. So then I sort of understood the principle. And it really struck me when I saw understood why the structure like that, mm-hmm. and it's so well designed. So I mentioned that the protein consists of 1,000 amino acid residues. So the one particular residue may do several things at once. Mm-hmm. And it's so designed. Mm-hmm. So it's its design is clearly sort of beyond our sort of imagination and our human ability. Mm-hmm. So I suddenly understood that there is a very long time in front of you, right?
So you're seeing a great model builder at work, which you can appreciate from your childhood.
Oh, yeah, right.
But what
I understood finally is, well, in a sense, you have before you, there is a very long time of evolution. Maybe I don't know how many billions of years, but mm-hmm. yeah.
So it's a structure that has evolved over time to do a very intricate and subtle process,
yeah.
and it's a beautiful mechanism,
right.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about this moment of creativity in this process you just described. I mean, what are your feelings when you get the first image, then you have this last image that you can't understand, but then over time you create the intermediary images, and then you, wow.
Oh, yeah.
What are your feelings?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so to understand the structure, to seeing the structure or solving the structure may not take too much time.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding the structure takes really long time. And to write a good paper, and you need time to see why and what this structure really means. And I sort of realized, so the idea comes from somewhere above.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you are really stuck. And so just thinking, and sometimes it's just the idea come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that explains very nicely.
Because you're seeing the perfection of the model to you go back to your childhood. I mean, in other words, it's a master design,
mm-hmm.
in this little piece. Does this make you a more religious person, or is it just awe, or how does it affect you personally?
Well, that sort of changed my sort of view of my life,
mm-hmm.
because you compare to so long time before you. Your life is not just it's like a point, or maybe not a point mm-hmm. itself.
Your personal
so
life, one's personal
yeah,
life,
yeah, right,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But I sort of in a kind of shocking idea. Mm-hmm. Your life is so short, but at the same time, it gives you. It's a contiguous
mm-hmm.
Strain of points, right? Other people are living, and also you are maybe somebody succeeds you. And so and I'm just not a single point,
mm-hmm.
right, my life. Is. So what I understood is it's maybe so short, but maybe become a good point for other points.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I wanted to, to sort of make that my point a bit useful to other people.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of came to my mind. And also, because it's so short, you can't really take to, for example, your properties. You cannot bring your. To the successors, for example. And so it's really changed. I think it's changed my mind in terms of your view to your life and your sort of, your view of some values, variable things.
Values.
Yeah, values.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me that the insight is inspirational.
Right.
It inspires you, but at the same time, you recognize what a tiny, tiny contribution this is if you look at the whole evolution of the structure.
Right.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, but But yeah, sometimes
it's important. Don't misunderstand me. Yeah. I mean, it's but I'm trying to characterize what you just said. So does it then? But I guess the really important point here is that what you've opened up is a way for others to continue the process of seeing.
Yeah, I think so.
And what kind of future research does this suggest that we need to do? Are there insights here that suggest to you, well, a whole new area of research which we have to be training people for?
Yeah. Okay. Now I have a sort of series of structures. I sort of understood roughly how it really works, but. If you consider in terms of energy, it's not easy to understand. And I did not explain or actually address the question where the energy of ATP goes in yesterday's. And I also did not show how the real protein is fluctuating in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fluctuating. Mm-hmm. And it's so-called thermal energy. That means we are living in this temperature, mm-hmm. not at 0 degrees, for example. And so that's it seems to be a real energy of whole of our biological processes. Mm-hmm. But how did the protein sort of incorporate those thermal energy into the function is not well understood,
mm-hmm.
because the crystallography is just a snapshot, mm-hmm. of its real process. So it's although we sort of the principle of sort of functions or the sort of tools protein use to achieve its function, we sort of understood, I think. But the more sort of basic principle, how it uses energies,
mm-hmm.
is still far away from our understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I have to explore those things,
mm-hmm.
and it requires new technology, certainly.
Mm-hmm. And then again, the answer to the puzzle might be by seeing, because what you will see is a change in structures, mm-hmm. but you don't know what that is at this point.
Don't you?
Right. Yeah. How would you advise students to prepare for a future in science focusing on these kind of problems?
Yeah. I think it's quite important to think about how the machine you use is works, for mm-hmm. example. Why is the sort of a start point of all the sciences, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, by the machine, you're referring to the technology or...
Yeah,
for example,
you have to measure the concentration of proteins in your solution test tube.
Mm-hmm.
And the people usually do is just put it, mm-hmm. and get the number. That's all,
mm-hmm.
right? But you have to think what kind of mechanism or principle it you are used, and what kind of electronic devices changes its signal to number. So to understand or mm-hmm. to expand your sort of knowledge to a sort of new field, you have to sort of understand quite basic things,
mm-hmm.
and principles,
mm-hmm.
right?
So what you're really saying is theoretical physics or theoretical biology isn't enough. That you have to go forward, having the capacity to understand how the technology works,
right.
how it is engineered, so it can be re-engineered to advance the theoretical sciences.
Right, definitely. That kind of things.
So what's the way to prepare to do that? Build model planes?
Yeah, quite possible. That's a very good thing.
and What do you see as being the next major advance in these sciences? That is, you know, understanding. Is it what you just said? Understanding where the energy goes and how that works.
Yeah, that's one thing, and the people want to know. And well, the advance in the biology field is so fast. So I couldn't really sort of tell, but in my sort of narrow field of science, yes, that's next thing.
Yeah,
and also. I understood that to good science, you have to do some sort of systematic studies. If you look at only one thing, it's maybe too narrow-minded. Mm-hmm. So if you consider something related, it gives you the correct answer. It happens many times, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, you have to look a bit wider than your sort of current interest. And also, and in crystallization experiment, for example, I found that you have to sort of explore a bit wider than sort of normal ones, and really find where is the optimum, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so it systematically scanned the conditions. And so the systematic study is quite important. It's a kind of logical thinking, right? Mm-hmm. And also look at other things. Then the information from there may sort of help you to consider in the right directions. So, two things, really. But that means you have to work very hard.
and I think you're really emphasizing an interdisciplinary perspective.
Right.
But let's go back to your literature and so on. And your philosophic background. That's
right.
Also important because
you will be able
to appreciate what you've done.
Yeah. Also, logical thinking. Yeah, it's quite important to me.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Professor, for joining us and accepting our limited knowledge as we explored this very exciting field that you're developing. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for joining us for this conversation with history.
You've been listening to a podcast from University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Thank you for listening.